Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news. Stand by now for the World View. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't tolerate sponsors, we don't take calls, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have you here. So much stuff that I've just got to jump in. Plus, I didn't do anything interesting this week, did we? I'm asking my extremely attractive audio engineer if we did anything interesting that might be worth talking about this week.
You went to Omaha.
I went to Omaha. That was definitely not interesting. Although I have a funny story about that. I don't know how funny it is. Anyway, I got to the dive dump hotel in Omaha, and I had no internet. And I informed management that this was a working trip and that I would need internet.
Yes, sir, don't worry, we'll get it, I'll check it out right now. I'll go reboot the server, I'll go reboot the router.
So this is 10 o'clock, 10:30 at night. He reboots this and that, and nothing's happening. And call him at about 11:30, finally, and I say, it's just not working. Maybe I could find another room. He said, sir, are you aware that this is the weekend of the College World Series? There are no rooms. No rooms available. We are sold out. And so I said, okay, you know what? I'm just going to go to sleep, and I'll need internet in the morning, if at all possible.
Oh, yes, we'll change you to a new room in the morning, sir, no problem.
So, get up in the morning, I go do some work, I come back. The internet's still not working. I call the office.
Oh, yes, sir, what has happened, sir, is that the antenna that runs from the router to the main side of the hotel that you are on is simply down. There is a cable problem. We will have it fixed.
At this point, emails are building up. I need to send out emails with attachments and things. And I went to another meeting, came back to the hotel. Now it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the internet's still not working. And finally I went, and in fact, the fellow who had been on at 11 o'clock the night before was back on. Finally. Had the same accent, too, as the other fellow that I'd talked to during the day. And I said, listen, I don't mean to be a pain, but on your sign up there in big 12-inch letters, it says free Wi-Fi, and that's one of the reasons I booked this dump. And I really could use another room. And I had one more meeting to go to in the evening. And he said, yes, sir, go ahead. I'll tell you what, sir, I will give you jacuzzi room. You can have jacuzzi room. I said, I don't really need a jacuzzi. I don't have time for a jacuzzi. I barely have time to take a shower. Just all I want is the Wi-Fi. Oh, but in the jacuzzi room, the Wi-Fi is very good, and the jacuzzi is very, very nice. You should avail yourself of it. Give it a try. So I moved to the new room, went to my meeting, came back. By now, it's 8 o'clock, 8:30. Did a conference call. Glanced at the jacuzzi, sent all my emails and attachments, and immediately went to sleep. Woke up early the next morning and checked out and headed for my next meeting. And so, see, that wasn't interesting. It turns out it really wasn't that interesting. So that was my brush with Omaha. Oh yeah, don't ever put your BlackBerry on automatic time change, because it moves all your appointments up an hour. you don't need that. Trust me, when you cross the international date line or whatever, the time zone line, into Omaha. Anyway, let's move on into the news of the day. Let's start in England, from Wellington, England, and the Reuters Wire. Let's see, Paul Nigel Sneddon. I apologize. This is from Palmerston, New Zealand. I wouldn't want to confuse anyone. Paul Nigel Snedden pled guilty to careless driving and drunk driving after being nearly three times over the legal alcohol limit last Wednesday. Police found Snedden, a former baker, trapped in his overturned Ford on June 1st after he failed to take a corner properly and crashed. And what was he doing when the police found him? Was he praying, thanking God that he had not perished in the accident? No. He was drinking another beer. Now, his defense lawyer, in his defense, says that when Snedden found he couldn't open the doors on the vehicle and realized he was trapped, after a minute or two, he realized he had nothing else to do, so he cracked open another beer. So when police arrived, he was drinking beer number, well, who knows? They asked him how much he'd had to drink. He said, plenty. I've been drinking for 4 days. So 4 days. And just one more before they took him off to jail. Snedden, shockingly, surprisingly, Snedden is estranged from his wife. But anyway, just a little insight on how seriously offenders take the justice system. Just a little window into where we are. All right, now let's go right into the war file, because that is the big story, and it will continue to be the big story, I do believe. As we go into the week ahead, what we witnessed over this past week was a catastrophic display of disarray and discord in the command structure in the Afghan campaign. Well, you've heard the story. Let me go here from Fox News. A military source close to General David Petraeus says that one of the first things Petraeus will do when he takes over in Afghanistan is modify the rules of engagement to make it easier for U.S. troops to engage in combat with the enemy. Now, that sentence, it just doesn't... We're supposed to be in Afghanistan to engage in combat with the enemy, but it seems we have to change the rules of engagement so that our troops can engage in combat with the enemy. Which just doesn't... It just doesn't register. It doesn't calculate. It doesn't... Well, anyway, as soon as word came out that Petraeus might alter the rules of combat so that we could kill and destroy the enemy, another Petraeus spokesman pushed back on that claim and said, no, not necessarily. The policy is what the policy is, and General Petraeus supports the policy. And so now we don't know what is going to happen. Except we are not going to win in Afghanistan. Whatever winning had been defined down to, even that's not going to happen. Apparently, the Obama-McChrystal rules of engagement, if you're not familiar, have effectively forced the troops to fight, according to the troops, quote, with one hand tied behind our backs, unquote. That's according to some troop who talked to the Rolling Stone reporter there. It's just disastrous. Oh, it's so sad. The rules of engagement there, the McChrystal Obama rules. Everyone talk about what a great guy McChrystal is, what a hardcore soldier. I just can't help but think, here's a guy who was handpicked by Barack Hussein Obama and who serves under Obama and who is implementing the Obama policy. How can he be such a hardcore soldier? I think he's not. I'm sorry. I know he runs 7 miles a day, he eats one meal, and he's gone out at night with the grunts and the snake eaters, and that's all well and good. But he's still a politician general. And anyone who would implement the policies of Barack Hussein Obama simply cannot be the right man for the job. And I don't think Petraeus is either. The rules of engagement generally prohibit troops from firing unless they're shot at, and they can't launch bomb or artillery attacks when civilians are near the target, which is almost always the case with the brave warriors of Allah. They always hang around civilians. President Obama, according to Fox News, stressed last Wednesday after he accepted McChrystal's resignation that the change in command does not represent a shift in war policy. Just to dispel any rumors that the rules of engagement might change, This does not represent a shift in war policy. Indeed, Mr. Obama, it clearly represents a collapse in whatever war policy you were pursuing, and it's sad for our troops. Yeah, there's a young fella in our church thinking about joining the Marine Corps, and I was surprised to find myself saying, just think twice about that, my friend. Just think twice, please. Anyway. More from the war file. Not to worry. All is not lost in Afghanistan. Gary Faulkner, Bin Laden hunter, civilian, is back home here in Colorado after his personal quest to track down al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden ended when he was arrested in northern Pakistan. Let's see. He didn't speak in Colorado, but during a stopover over in Los Angeles, Faulkner was asked by reporters if he planned to return, and he said absolutely. He's going to go find Osama bin Laden. So maybe he could take over for General McChrystal and help Mr. Obama implement. Well, no, he's obviously opposed to the policy that seems to be in force in Afghanistan. And then again, of course, you know that I'm of the opinion that Osama bin Laden has been dead for many, many years. But if Mr. Faulkner proves me wrong, that would be great. Take him out. Buy him a beer. Although he wouldn't, I think he'd get like $20 million. Maybe he could buy me a beer. All right, more from the war file. From Palm Beach, Florida, Ryan Danoff was fishing with two friends about 4 miles off Hollywood Beach in Florida last Sunday when he spied what he thought was a mast on the horizon. Well, it turns out it was a periscope. A periscope, I said, off the coast of Florida. He tried to chase it down, got his boat up to about 20 knots, heading for the periscope, and the periscope sank beneath the waves, and whatever was below the surface blew its ballast. Well, whatever was below the surface, I think it was probably a submarine, wouldn't you think, since there was a periscope and he could see the ballast being blown? Anyway, these folks in the news media, this is from the Palm Beach Post, they're so terrified to report a fact or anything obvious, and I'm not sure why. But anyway, it blew its ballast and it disappeared. The Coast Guard says they're looking into it. And that's all we know. And I don't know if it's anything. I mean, could have been one of our guys, you know, who didn't want to be spotted for whatever reason by a fella out there fishing. Maybe it was one of our submarines that didn't want to admit they got spotted by a guy fishing. That's kind of embarrassing. Then again, it might have been a Russian or North Korean or Chinese. Who knows? I just wanted to make sure I covered that in case China invades via Florida next week. I can be able to say that I was ahead of the curve on that. All right, more from the war file. From Tehran, Iran. Iran, it turns out, after threatening and saber-rattling for the past couple weeks, saying they were going to send a ship full of Persian women to break the blockade in Gaza, Iran says now it will not send a ship to break the Gaza blockade. That's right. Instead of sending a ship, an Iranian delegation of lawmakers, they say they'll travel to Lebanon and sail on one of the aid ships expected to leave Gaza from there. Now, you know that Lebanon, Turkey, and all the Arab and Persian and Muslim anti-Israeli nations have been threatening to break the blockade ever since the Israelis, well, killed all those terrorists on that ship a few weeks ago. And we've all been waiting with bated breath to see the next ship to break the blockade. And tensions were elevated last week when we thought Iran might actually do it because everyone's terrified of Iran. I mean, aren't you? They're so scary. Well, here the Iranian ship had been expected to sail last Sunday for Gaza. They said it was going to carry supplies and medical equipment and activists, peaceful, peace-loving Muslim activists. But plans have been canceled due to restrictions imposed by the occupying Zionist regime, according to Iran. Yeah, restrictions. You know what those restrictions are, ladies and gentlemen? The credible threat of force. It will always scare an Arab. It'll make him run behind a woman in a burqa and hide and shiver and wet himself. They're famous for that. And so the Israelis have basically said, look, if you try to break the blockade, if we're forced to, we will sink your ship. We will board your ship, and we will engage you in hand-to-hand combat. And so every Arab country that's been threatening to do this is thinking twice. Because, well, that's what Arabs do. They do best when they sneak up on civilians and blow them up. Or when they capture civilians and tie them up and cut their heads off. They're not so interested in heads up, face-to-face, hand-to-hand combat with the IDF or any military. Let's see. Anything else here? Oh, yeah. In Lebanon, Arab Muslim organizers said they plan to sail any day to break the evil blockade of the Zionist regime. But they still haven't decided exactly when they're going to come out from behind that woman in the burqa, and change their shorts, and actually launch a ship. So I was driving in the car last week with my 8-year-old, and she said, Daddy, can you play that? I said, well, I could probably play some of the notes, but it wouldn't quite sound like that. Eric Johnson, Cliffs of Dover. Are you playing that in honor of the fellow from New Zealand? Who was, I mean, it, I know you weren't playing it for the Iranians. Anyway.
I like this song.
Oh, you just like that song. Okay, well, let's now, we see how the Arab and Muslim mind responds to the credible use of force, but let's take a look at how the world responds to the constant call for the destruction of Israel by the Muslim Arab states. Anti-Semitism on the rise yet again in Berlin, and this is from the Associated Press. Arab youths threw stones at a Jewish dance group during a street festival in Hanover, Germany, injuring one dancer and forcing the group to cancel its performance. The Muslim teenagers also used a megaphone to shout anti-Semitic slurs during the attack last Saturday. 6 suspects have been identified, 5 Arabic immigrants and 1 German. So anti-Semitism on the rise in Germany again, and it's not the neo-Nazis, it's the neo-Muslims who have moved into Germany and made themselves at home and are having lots of kids, while the Northern European women fail to reproduce and are just interested in, well, I'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. In Holland, the Dutch, listen to this. Amsterdam police, you may have heard, often disguise officers as decoy prostitutes, decoy gays, and decoy grannies in operations to deter muggings and attacks on homosexuals in the city's red light district. That's probably not a good gig if you're a cop. You go in and the district commander says, you're going to be assigned to the red light district as a decoy gay. You know, and you have to dress really sharp for one thing, you know. You have to be thin. You got to work on your lisp all morning, you know, and get out there on the streets. Anyway, so you've heard of this, right? I've heard of this, police doing this, using decoys. Well, there was some secret television recordings by the Jewish broadcasting company there in Amsterdam. They had broadcast last weekend. The footage showed young men, often of Muslim immigrant origin, shouting and making Nazi salutes at a rabbi when he visited different areas of the Dutch capital. Not the red light district. No. So anyway, Holland is shocked that this is happening, that this level of anti-Semitism can be captured by a hidden camera on the streets of their fine progressive European socialist society. And so the Dutch police are now using decoy Jews. That's right. They're setting up decoy Jews by dressing law enforcement officers in Jewish religious dress, such as skull caps, in an effort to catch anti-Semitic attackers. So this is Western Europe. Anti-Semitism in Western Europe? No, that could never happen. What a shock. Anyway, as long as we tolerate these Arabs and these Muslims calling for the destruction of the state of Israel, and as long as we stop having babies, we in the West, and we allow the Muslims to immigrate, and, you know, they have lots and lots of babies, it's just a matter of time before not only Germany and Holland pretty much disappear as we know them. Not that we appreciate them all that much at the moment, but I mean, it's better than a caliphate. A European social democracy is certainly better than a caliphate, I think. I hope. But also, Israel will eventually be, again, dispersed. They'll never disappear. I believe that because that's what God said. Yeah. And it's pretty amazing that they haven't already been wiped off the planet. But there's where we are. In the war. All right, from the war abroad, let's move to the war here on our shores, at least one of the battles in the war. I heard this week, as I listened to talk radio, alleged talk radio, allegedly conservative, I should say. It is talk radio. Yeah, but allegedly conservative. There was a Gallup poll out this week that said 42% of Americans describe themselves as either very conservative or conservative. And they say that's up from 40% back in 2009. And only 20% of people responding to the Gallup poll call themselves liberal or very liberal. All right, so all of the conservative talkers, the Limbots and Limbaugh himself, all touted this poll to show people, don't give up hope, we are winning, see? And I'm just not so sure how to take this poll, because if you read the entire report on the poll, what you have is you've got 42% of Americans describe themselves very conservative or conservative, then you got 35% describe themselves as moderate, and you've got the 20%. Describe themselves as liberal. So basically, we've got 55% are either moderate or liberal. And so you know what a moderate is, right? He's anti-tax, but he's pro-homosexual and he's pro-abortion. That's a moderate. See, in my economy, that's a liberal. Now, the 20%, I mean, they're at the bathhouses every night. These are the freaks. These are people who work in Barney Frank's office. That's the 20%, okay? They're long gone. They're history. The 35%, they're liberals. So we've got 55% liberal, and we've got 42% conservative. So can we do the math on that real quick? That's 9% undecided. 9% are apparently undecided. You see, a lot of my conservative friends who I love, They tell me not to give up hope because these moderates, these 35%, they're people who we could change their minds. And I really, really, really hope that's true. But I my concern is that it's really only the 9% who are just so disengaged that they haven't thought about anything, and I don't know. But perhaps my friends are right, and that the 35% who call themselves moderates, perhaps they're just going along to get along, if you know what I mean. I mean, if you want a job in corporate America, you certainly don't want to let anyone know that you're against the killing of babies, that you support the idea that every human being should be a legal person from the moment they are conceived. And you certainly don't want to let anyone know that you have any problems at all whatsoever with homosexuality. You don't even want them to know that it grosses you out. So, so perhaps this 35%, they're just going along to get along, you know? They're trying to not make waves. And as the idea, going back to the personhood argument, as you know, I'm an avid supporter of the personhood movement, and I encourage you to look into it. You know, maybe this 35%, as the idea that the government should not sanction the murder of innocent children, as that idea becomes more mainstream, because right now that's a radical right-wing religious fanatic idea. The idea that our government should not sanction the murder of innocent children. Only right-wing crazies think that. Well, but as that becomes more mainstream, maybe that 35% will come over to our side, little by little. I hope that's the truth. You know, the Bible calls the masses sheep. And, you know, probably for darn good reason. People are generally just sheep. And they'll do whatever is considered mainstream and politically correct. We've simply got to mainstream this idea that our government should no longer sanction the dehumanization and murder of innocent children. I know it sounds like a radical idea. But perhaps one day it'll be mainstream. Okay, now that was from the personhood file. Do I have more? Oh, here we go. This is from the culture file. I told you last week about my experiences going to the park with my children, and that nobody there spoke English, at least not the parents, and how that was just a little disturbing to me. And not that I have anything against people who don't speak English. I'm married to a foreigner, for crying out loud. She's not even a citizen. She's a resident alien. So I got no problem with that. It's just I notice that there aren't any average white girls with kids, it doesn't seem. Anyway, from New York to the Reuters Wire, more American women, according to Reuters, are choosing not to have children. Nearly 20% of older women do not have children, compared to just 10% in the late 1970s, according to a Pew Research study. Said Devira Cohn, the co-author of this Pew report, and Devira, is that a man or a woman? I have no clue. Devira Cohn says, in recent decades, social pressure to play traditional roles has lessened in a broad variety of ways, and there's more leeway for individual choice. This could play a part in lowering pressure for people to get married and bear children. That's terrifying. I know that you idiots out there think that that's a liberating thing, but it's terrifying to think about what's going to happen in the future. What else does Devira have to say? Women, she says, have more options than in the past to build strong careers and to exercise the choice to kill their children. No, wait, she said to exercise the choice not to have children. I apologize. And that's true. People have all kinds of choices now. Women. And I'm all for choice. I support choices. Yeah, and, it's just sad. It's just sad that men in America can apparently no longer satisfy a woman. I mean, that's just sad for manliness and masculinity in Western civilization. There are very few men out there who can keep their woman satisfied by, giving her a family and children and spiritual leadership and love and everything. A house, all of that. There are very few of us left. We can, well, yeah. Let's see. Well, oh, 1 in 5 white women. Now, I didn't insert that. This is what it says. 1 in 5 white women ages 40 to 44 were childless in 2008. So what is that? That's 20%. And it's just going up, 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 up. Anyway. Let's see. More from the personhood file. there's a new study. And researchers say that breastfeeding offers significant protection from cancer. You ever heard that? Breastfeeding offers significant protection from cancer. They also noted in this latest study that the highest reported risk factor in developing the disease of breast cancer was abortion. The highest reported risk factor. The findings published in the journal Cancer Epidemiology are the latest research to show a link between abortion and breast cancer. The research was carried out by scientists at the University of Colombo in Sri Lanka. It is the fourth epidemiological study to report such a link in the past 14 months, with research in China, Turkey, and the United States showing similar conclusions. But some researchers questioned the accuracy of the figures and said women should not be worried. Come on. It's only 4 trials. It's only 4 studies in the last 14 months. Don't be worried. It's perfectly normal to have a doctor go in with instruments and chop your child into pieces and then vacuum that child out of your womb. It's perfectly fine. You wouldn't think that your body would have some kind of negative reaction to that, would you? Well, back to the story from the Daily Mail. Although the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists in Britain has acknowledged the possibility of an abortion breast cancer link, most medical professionals in Britain remain unconvinced. This is because an international study led by Oxford University concluded in 2004 that having an abortion does not heighten a woman's risk. Some scientists say, however, that the Oxford research was flawed because many of the women studied were too young to have developed the disease. And by the way, folks, just in case you doubt, I mean, sometimes statistics are so obvious that even those of us who don't have PhDs can recognize certain trends. Get this. There's been an 80% increase in the rate of breast cancer since 1971. Not all from the personhood file. We've got a little bit more here. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina, from WorldNet Daily. One of 4 triangle abortion clinics in the Raleigh area killed their final baby last Saturday, and it's unclear whether the abortion clinic will close or simply stop offering abortions. Well, that's interesting. If an abortion clinic isn't offering abortions, why would it stay open? Anyway, let's leave that aside. National Women's Health Organization of Raleigh, which was founded in 1976 by the late women's rights activist Susan Hill, is, quote, in transition, unquote, according to Ann Rose, a longtime friend of feminist activist Susan Hill. Hill died of breast cancer in February of this year. Interestingly enough, Hill also owned abortion centers in Columbus, Georgia, and Jackson, Mississippi. Susan Hill, believe it or not, had no children and no heirs to leave the business to. She was also, according to her longtime friend, strident in opposing anti-abortion activists who allegedly threatened her life. Her brother, Dan, says any successor to her in the abortion business running her clinics would need similar fortitude against these anti-abortion activists. By the way, the story concludes, this is from WorldNet Daily. Nationwide, abortions are at their lowest level since the 1970s. I know. We're winning, right? That's what you hear? Let me get back to that, because I want to address this issue of why are abortion clinics closing? I mean, we know why the one in Wichita closed, because they didn't have a guy there to kill the babies anymore, so they shut it down. And here, the spiritual leader of this chain of clinics, she died of breast cancer. And you know, folks, it's getting harder and harder to find doctors willing to go into the baby-killing business. You know, have their specialty as baby killer. Yeah, it's getting harder and harder. And now, do you think that's due to National Right to Life or Concerned Women for America or the Susan B. Anthony list or the Republican Supreme Court justices or the RNC in general? Or do you think possibly the reason it's harder to find a doctor willing to go into the child-killing business, is that possibly due to the anti-abortion activists? Possibly. The ones who show up at the abortionist home, and the ones who take videos, and the ones who expose the criminal, evil, wicked, awful, horrible behavior that dominates the abortion industry. I think it's the activists. I really do. They're having an effect. And why are abortions at their lowest level since the 1970s? I think the younger generation is realizing to some degree that that it just ain't all about sex and fun and good times and getting high and having sex. And I think that we're reaching some of the young people. I also think, unfortunately, that chemical abortifacients are becoming much more mainstream, and surgical abortions are on the decline. But I hope the former is happening more often than the latter, and I do pray that the younger generation realizes the foolishness of the generation that sold to them the idea that you should just be able to have sex all the time with no consequences with anyone and dispose of the results. I hope they don't buy that lie. All right. Oh, one more from the personhood file. Yeah, we don't have an abortion file here at the Weekly Worldview, because we don't like talking about abortion. Nobody likes it, right? You bring up that topic, people close their ears because they're just ensconced in their position. But when you talk about personhood and should the government dehumanize and promote the murder of any certain class of citizen, well, then you're likely to have a bit longer conversation with, say, a moderate. So let's talk about, this is from London. British health experts say the human fetus, what do they say, quote, the human fetus cannot feel pain before the age of 24 weeks, so there is no reason to change Great Britain's abortion laws, unquote. Yeah. Anti-abortion activists over in the United Kingdom who want, they want the country's current 24-week time limit for terminations reduced. This is how far the pro-life movement has fallen in Europe and here as well, is that they're just trying to move the marker as to when you can butcher the child. They're trying to say, look, just not after 24 weeks. So they allow and promote the idea of a study of fetal pain. And the study by the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, this is from MSNBC. This study comes back, it was published last Friday, comes back and says, they say there's increasing evidence that even after 24 weeks, the fetus is in a state of, quote, continuous sleep-like unconsciousness or sedation. Okay. So, that's what the doctors say. So there's no need to change our policy. We could, and anyway, this idea that there's any restriction on abortions, if you've bought into that, it's ridiculous. You can butcher a child here, in Europe, in Asia, anywhere in the world, you can butcher a child right up into the ninth month because of all the loopholes and the way the law is written. And because once you give the enemy, once you give in on the idea that the unborn child is a person to be protected from the moment they come into existence, once you give up on that idea, there simply is no rational reason not to be able to butcher the child right up until the child's born. There simply is no rational, logical reason. And so this is where we are. Now, we did a study here at the Weekly Worldview, and we found that obstetricians feel no pain when their head is severed cleanly from their body while they sleep. We have conclusive evidence to back that claim up. We also found in another leg of our study that gynecologists feel no pain when caught squarely in the face by the blast of a 12-gauge shotgun from a distance of 12 feet. After reviewing the data, despite these conclusive findings, we here at the Weekly Worldview will continue in our position that obstetricians and gynecologists should not be shot or decapitated. Now let's move on to some economic news. I posited the idea a few weeks ago, almost jokingly, half jokingly, that at some point we might have to sell like Alaska or Hawaii or something like that here in the United States to try and pay off some of our bills. Well, listen to this. Greece is preparing to sell or offer long-term leases on some of its 6,000 islands in a desperate attempt to repay its debts. Yeah. Potential investors are mostly Russian and Chinese, oddly enough. I mean, can you see it here, folks? I mean, 20 years from now, you know, we might be selling Alaska or Hawaii. Or maybe even some of the mainland. Maybe start with Detroit and, you know, work your way up. I mean, it's just scary. I mean, the thing is money is real. You know, money is real. It's not just, I know that they say we have a fiat currency and all that. I know all that, but money, value is real. And the bottom line is when our government and governments around the world, when they cease being able to borrow money, I think they'll sell their mothers into slavery, let alone let go of Alaska or Arizona. Of course, Texas will secede, so they won't have to worry about that. But my goodness, it's actually happening in Greece. It's a microcosm of what could happen here. Hello, Alexis. How are you? Alexis making her radio debut. No, she's been on a number of times. All right. You're not supposed to be in the studio. Let's go. Now from the culture file. A 10-year-old boy was grand marshal for a gay pride parade last week in Fayetteville, Arkansas. A 10-year-old, I said. And so conservatives are upset and they're denouncing it, as you can well imagine. They're calling it child abuse over at American Family Association, and appropriately so. There was the director of operations for Northwest Arkansas Pride, Johnny Harper. this is from WorldNet Daily, and Chelsea Schilling says, she says, Johnny Harper is a person with a masculine voice and feminine-looking breasts. My, that's disturbing to think about. But thank you, Chelsea, for pointing that out. Anyway, Johnny Harper, sex indeterminate, but the director for operations at Northwest Arkansas Pride, Johnny says, the fact is The fact that he's 10 years old and he's so outspoken is a big positive, not only for our community, but the state as well as the country, to show that our children in this country are actually smarter than we give them credit for. You know, we're not in San Francisco or New York or something like that. We're pretty much a family affair here in Northwest Arkansas. We invite the kiddies. So that's Johnny Harper, sex indeterminate. The young child's father, they name the child in this article somewhere. I don't have it here. Anyway, his last name's Phillips. The kid's father and mother say they're honored and proud and not worried about any criticism. The child's father said in the last 6 months his son has traveled across the country and spoken to thousands of people. He says, this is a 10-year-old. He says, I'm a person. I may be 10, but I'm a person, said the young man, the 10-year-old, who declared himself an ambassador for equal rights. My goodness. You see, folks, it's all, if you miss this, this kid could be an advocate for personhood. He could be on the side of goodness and righteousness and light, but he's been taken over to the dark side by the faggots and his parents, who are no doubt moderates. All right. Let's move on into the culture file. From Washington, D.C., the Associated Press, President Barack Obama says he's chipping away at his long list of promises to gay voters. And that doesn't mean happy voters, ladies and gentlemen. That means homosexual voters. That's right. And he's working on his long list of promises. But according to AP, he has yet to win the enthusiastic backing of the reliably Democratic voting bloc. Well, let me just say, I'm not sure anyone would want the enthusiastic backing of homosexuals, if you know what I mean. I mean, it's just disgusting. I certainly wouldn't want it. But perhaps Barry Ho does. Well, certainly he wants the enthusiastic backing of. Certainly Barney Frank wants it. But let's move on, because that's just gross. Let's see. According to AP, instead of the sweeping changes that homosexuals had sought, a piece-by-piece approach has been the administration's favored strategy, drawing neither serious fire from conservatives nor lavish praise from the lavish, fabulous homosexual activists. So but Barry Ho, by pursuing a piecemeal strategy, has managed to not draw serious fire from the conservatives. You know, the homosexuals haven't drawn serious fire from the conservatives in 20 years. I mean, that war is over, and the queers have won. And it's just detrimental for the future of society and your children. Let's see. I have a quote here from a homosexual activist who says, we still need laws passed that achieve what these minimal efforts attempt to do piecemeal. That's Lane Hudson, a gay activist who last year interrupted Bill Clinton as he defended his administration's handling of gays and lesbians. I didn't think Bill Clinton handled anything but heterosexual interns. But apparently he handled something there, and the homos were not satisfied. You know, that's one of the problems with being a homosexual, is that at some point you realize that you're never satisfied. And that being completely wrapped up in yourself and your own deviant sexual obsessions never produces satisfaction. And most of them just become completely hardened in that attitude, and, you know, a lot of drugs and alcohol later, they go to an early grave, and it's just sad. And they don't have kids. And so just keep in mind that if everyone turns homosexual, we all die. Keep that in mind. What else does this homosexual activist say? The little things that the Beltway crowd pays attention to and the White House uses to say we're making so much progress, that doesn't translate outside the Beltway. It just doesn't translate. As if the homosexuals are not making enormous progress in their cultish march to death and misery. They're making enormous progress. You can't even warn them anymore about their destructive lifestyle without being called a hater and possibly arrested. So this homo says they're not making much progress. a Gallup poll last month. For all of you who listened to the Gallup poll on Rush Limbaugh and we're winning and all that, a Gallup poll last month found 70% of Americans favor allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly in the military. And only 53% now oppose legalizing gay marriage. So, I mean, are we winning? How many of the conservatives are included in this 70% who favor allowing green berets and negligees? There's just not a lot of time here. We're coming down to the end. I want to go to Portland, Oregon in the culture file from Portland. A Portland psychiatrist who plans to open a home for terminally ill patients seeking to kill themselves has had his license suspended by medical regulators. What a shock. The Oregon Medical Board took action last Thursday against Dr. Stuart Weisberg for an investigation of improperly prescribing drugs. They didn't mention the fact that he wants to kill people, but it's the Oregon Medical Board. I shouldn't be surprised. Oregon in 1997, you'll remember, became the first state to make it legal for a doctor to prescribe life-ending drugs to a terminally ill patient who requests it. And more than 400 patients Oregon have used the option, according to the Associated Press. This fellow was going to call his suicide house, the Dignity House, ironically enough. And it would have been the first of its kind in the United States. A 21-hour stay at the Dignity House would cost $600, and patients would be required to spend another $600 for an end-of-life camera to record their final hours. Maybe so Dr. Stuart Weisberg could review. I'm sure it would really get his kicks. Optional services include nursing, catering, security, a personal assistant, not a life coach, obviously, that wouldn't, but a personal assistant, a professional pianist, and flowers. Yeah, those are options. Weisberg's presence is another option that you can opt for at your suicide. He says, normally I will not be present for the completion of the Death of Dignity Acts. He says this on his website. If, however, you would like my therapy dog and me to be present at the time of your death, you may purchase a 3-hour window of our time for only $1,200. So for another $1,200, he'll attend your assisted suicide, which, you know, that used to be when you helped someone die, that was used to be murder. Now it's anyway. The 37-year-old doctor, according to the Oregon Medical Board, according to their suspension order, they say, quote, he's recently manifested behavior indicative of grandiosity, compulsivity, and risk-taking behavior that calls his ability to practice medicine competently and in conformity to the law into question. No mention there that he wants to kill people. But maybe that's part of the impulsive behavior, risk-taking. I don't know. Anyway, it's the spawn of Jack Kevorkian right there, and he's only 37 years old, for crying out loud. Hopefully he'll be reined in some way out there in Oregon. Let's go more into the culture file. A New Jersey lawmaker who was instrumental in helping to pass medical marijuana law back in January is now suggesting that New Jersey's premier university become a national center for research and curriculum into marijuana and its benefits. Yeah, this is Assemblyman Reed Gusciora. He suggested to his fellow legislators to turn Rutgers University, into a national academic leader in marijuana research and curriculum. He said students could learn everything from pain management to strategies to running a dispensary. Yeah, So if you get out of school and you realize you haven't really gotten an education, you're a moron, you've got two different sexually transmitted diseases, your girlfriend's had two abortions, your life is falling apart, your degree, you don't really know anything. Well, you could always fall back on opening a medical marijuana dispensary with your Rutgers degree. Anyway, he's also floated another trial balloon to allow Rutgers, as well as hospitals across the state of New Jersey, to become dispensaries for medical marijuana once the so-called conservative Chris Christie administration writes the rules and regulations that will put the New Jersey's medical marijuana law into effect. That's right, Chris Christie, the great white hope of conservatives. He's working with the medical marijuana pushers to make it easier and to how exactly are we going to legalize marijuana? So, you know, if this university at Rutgers, if these folks actually start studying marijuana, I'm certain that, I mean, it's a plant. And so there are certain things in it that are probably going to be found to help certain conditions, perhaps even in tetrahydrocannabinol itself. Don't get me wrong, I don't doubt that. But I think one of the first things that a serious clinical trial, an objective trial, would discover is that smoking it is not a good idea. That's all. I mean, for medical purposes, okay? Smoking it's not a good idea. Anyway, didn't I have something else? Oh, yeah. From the domestic tranquility file, for those of you who think that the legalization of marijuana is going to bring peace and harmony and kumbaya to the streets of our major cities, from Los Angeles, California, homicide detectives were trying to determine this past Friday whether deadly attacks on staff at two medical marijuana dispensaries were connected. Four robbers gunned down an employee and wounded another at about 4:15 p.m., broad daylight, last Thursday, at Higher Path Holistic Care Collective. That's the name. That's the name of this peace and love center. The Higher Path Holistic Care Collective. Over on Sunset Boulevard in the Echo Park area of Los Angeles. So they robbers broke in and shot one employee to death and shot another and wounded him. Killed was Matthew Butcher, a 27-year-old pot dealer from Los Angeles. 5 hours later, the owner of the Hollywood Holistic Dispensary found the body of an employee at his Hollywood medical marijuana dispensary. The 30-year-old pot barista, I don't know what you call him, a dope barista? He appeared to have been stabbed to death there in the peaceful and loving and colorful and beautiful and wonderful and marvelous medical marijuana dispensary. Stabbed to death, butchered, bled to death right there on the floor. So the Associated Press points out that medical marijuana dispensaries handle large amounts of money, which could make them targets for robbers. Yeah. Okay. You know, they also have large amounts of marijuana. And also, are you aware that they're competing with the Mexican mafia? So do you think that the Mexican mafia is going to allow all these hippies with their Birkenstocks and their tie-dyed t-shirts and their degrees from Rutgers to come in and just take their business? I mean, do you really think? I mean, have you met these guys from the Mexican mafia? I don't think they're going to give up the business that easily, ladies and gentlemen. So not only are we going to legalize marijuana, causing younger and younger people to think that it's just okay, and we're going to corrupt and destroy the minds of countless thousands of children, we're going to retard the potential of every single person who gets addicted to marijuana. Not only are we going to do that, but the violence level will increase, because the gangs are going to fight for their piece of the action. So it's, I mean, all you hippies who just think that you figured it out, I mean, it always ends up worse than what you intended in your peace and love and all of that. All right. I think it's time that we're probably out of time. So let's move on to public schools. Do you still send your... children to public school? I don't want to talk about public schools. If you send your children to public schools, you're sinning against your child and you're sinning against God. Okay? What do I want to do here? Well, here we go. From the culture file, from Salinas, California, police say that Patrick Fusek, a 38-year-old man, and Samantha Tomasini, a 20-year-old woman, were arrested early last Wednesday, a few hours after Fusek approached two women. He approached two women outside a Walmart and asked if they'd like to purchase his child. Now, the women initially thought that Fusek was joking, but when he became persistent, they became suspicious that he was actually serious, and they reported him to police. They apparently were trying to sell their 6-month-old baby for $25 outside of a Walmart store. Yeah. Fortunately, it was Walmart, and nobody actually had $25 in cash on them.
Oh, God.
No, that's not true. I even shop at Walmart. Do we? Yeah, we never. Anyway, shocking and surprising that Fusek and Tomasini, according to police, they say the couple appeared to be high on methamphetamine. I know, it's shocking. How could that possibly be? That's it. I can't do this anymore. I can't take it anymore. I've got a bunch of other... I can't close with any of these horrible stories because I don't want you to be depressed. So I'm just going to leave it at that. That's the show for this week. But, yes, and Alexis is ready for me to get off. So I want to thank my friends at KGOV, KGov.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Theology Online, and... So Alexis just walked off with the microphone. Who was I? Oh, Theology Online, and of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.